Chapter 39. Through the van's open window, Jonas Faulkman could hear the shrill whine of jet engines. He knew Brooklyn had a little-known U.S. military base that was surprisingly close to Manhattan, but he could not recall if Fort Hamilton had an airfield. Wherever they had brought him, his captors definitely seemed to be involved in something more serious than book piracy. Someone powerful wants to prevent the publication of Catherine Solomon's manuscript, but who? A rival scientist, perhaps? Shivering on the frigid metal floor of the van, Faulkman plumbed his memory for clues, thinking back to the moment he had first learned of the manuscript's existence. Robert Langdon had called to ask if Faulkman would be willing to have lunch with his brilliant friend, Catherine Solomon, and listen to her stunning book proposal. Faulkman agreed immediately, knowing that brilliant and stunning were not words the Harvard professor threw around lightly. They met at Faulkman's favorite table in Manhattan, the back booth at Trattoria dell'Arte, where authentic Italian cuisine was served in a room decorated like an artist's studio, adorned rather distinctively by paintings and sculptures featuring famous Italian noses. He had read the biographical info Catherine Solomon had sent him, and he was thoroughly impressed by her list of scientific accomplishments, published articles, PhD in cognitive science, and prominence in her field. When they sat down in person, Faulkman saw within minutes that Catherine Solomon was even more impressive in real life than she was on paper. Not unlike Langdon himself, she was affable, humble, and razor sharp. She was also naturally promotable, possessing a rare combination of charm and striking beauty that would be an ideal fit for the brave new world of 21st century publishing, which relied so heavily on social media. After some small talk and uncorking a bottle of 2016 Solaia, Langdon's favorite Super Tuscan, conversation naturally flowed toward her book idea. "In the simplest terms," Catherine began, "the book will be an exploration of human consciousness. It's based on my research over the last 20 years, as well as several of my recent scientific breakthroughs." She paused, sipping her wine, thinking. "As you probably know, human consciousness has long been believed to be the product of chemical processes in the brain. This means that human consciousness cannot exist without the brain." "Interesting, but rather obvious," Faulkman thought. It was his job to remain skeptical until he was bowled over by an idea. "The problem," Catherine said, a mysterious smile parting her lips, "is that this standard model of consciousness is incorrect." Both men grew more attentive. "I intend to write a book that illuminates a revolutionary new model of consciousness that will have repercussions for everything we know about life, including the very nature of reality itself." Faulkman arched his eyebrows appreciatively and smiled. "From a publishing perspective, there's nothing like aiming high," he studied Catherine. "But I do have one question. Many people propose books with exciting new theories. Do you?" "Of course," she said. "My work is backed up with plenty of hard science." "You read my mind," Faulkman said, impressed. "I wouldn't waste your time without evidence," she countered. Langdon looked amused that Catherine was holding her own so effortlessly. "Well, you certainly have my attention," Faulkman said. "What is this revolutionary model of human consciousness?"
"At first, it will seem impossible," Catherine replied. "So to prepare your minds for that and establish a baseline,"
she reached into her Kuyana bag and pulled out an iPad.
"I will first show you an example of something I think we can all agree is impossible."
Faulkman glanced at Langdon, who looked equally mystified. Catherine tapped the tablet a few times and then propped it on the table, facing Faulkman and Langdon, who found themselves looking at a pair of side-by-side videos, a split screen showing two different fishbowls, each with a lone goldfish swimming in lazy circles. "Goldfish are impossible?"
"These are two live video feeds," Catherine said. "The feeds are from two separate stationary cameras in my lab in California. They watched the two fish, which swam in two similar fish bowls with blue pebbles on the bottom and a submerged statuette. The only difference between the two bowls appeared to be the statuettes inside each bowl. One was the sculpted word yes, and the other the sculpted word no. Bizarre. Faulkman glanced up at Catherine Solomon, waiting for her to explain, but she just nodded for him to keep watching. Politely, Faulkman returned his gaze to the two camera feeds. Two fish swimming in circles. What am I supposed to be seeing here? Incredible, Langdon whispered beside him. In that moment, Faulkman saw it too. Strangely, the two goldfish were swimming in perfect unison. When one fish paused, darted, or swam to the surface, the other did precisely the same thing in the other bowl, at the exact same instant. The two fish were perfectly synchronized, down to their slightest twitches. Stupefied, Faulkman watched the two goldfish swim in flawless unison for at least 15 seconds before he finally shook his head and glanced up. Okay, that is impossible. I'm glad you feel that way, Catherine said. How are the fish doing there? He demanded. Remarkable, right? She said. The answer, in fact, is quite simple. Langdon and Faulkman sat riveted, awaiting her explanation. To start, she said, how many fish do you see here in total? Faulkman met both their eyes. Two, he replied. And you, Robert?
Two.
Langdon concurred. Perfect. You both see what most people see and what is presented before you. Two separate fish in two separate bowls.
How else could you see it? Faulkman thought. One bowl says yes and one says no, but the two fish are in precise sync.
Now, what if I told you, Catherine said, that their separateness is an illusion? What if I told you these two fish are, in fact, one entity, a single, unified organism connected to the same consciousness moving in unison?
Faulkman sensed he was about to hear some New Age mumbo-jumbo about how all living things are interconnected. He had no idea how these fish had linked their movements, but he was pretty sure it was not because they were tapped into the same cosmic consciousness. What did you expect, Jonas? She's a noeticist from California.
Perspective is a choice, Catherine continued, and perspective is key when it comes to understanding consciousness. You have both chosen to view this as two fish swimming in perfect sync. However, if you can change your perspective and view them as one fish, one mind, one unified organism simply swimming, then it's quite normal.
Langdon looked suddenly concerned that her pitch was about to go off the rails. It's not really a choice, is it, Catherine? Two separate unconnected goldfish cannot be viewed as a singular organism.
This is true, but they're not two separate organisms, Professor, she replied. They are one, and I'll bet you your Mickey Mouse watch that I can prove it to you right now, scientifically, beyond any shadow of a doubt.
Langdon again studied the two live videos. Two distinct bulls, two distinct fish. I'll take the bet, Langdon finally said. Convince me it's one organism.
Very well, Catherine smiled, and let me quote my favorite symbologist. Sometimes a change in perspective is all it takes to reveal the truth. She touched the iPad screen. Here is a third live camera feed from the same lab, and here is your change in perspective, gentlemen.
The new camera angle was an aerial view, looking down at a single fish bowl, similar to the other bowls, blue pebbles, some kind of statuette, and a lone goldfish swimming in circles. Curiously, this aerial view also showed that two video cameras were set up next to the bowl, pointing at it from different positions.
I don't understand, Faulkman said. You've been looking at two videos of the same bowl, Catherine said. One bowl, one fish, viewed from two different perspectives. Their separateness is an illusion. They are a single organism.
But they're clearly in two different bowls, Faulkman protested. What about the yes and no statues? Those are different. How could it be one bowl?
Langdon hung his head. Marcus Raitz, he whispered. I should have seen it.
Catherine reached into her bag and pulled out a familiar statuette, a copy of the yes statue from the first bowl. She held it up, letting Faulkman read the word. Then she rotated the statue 90 degrees, and Faulkman heard himself gasp. From this new angle, the statuette looked totally different. From this direction, it read no.
This piece of art, Catherine said, is the work of sculptor Marcus Raitz, who, much like the universe we live in, is a master of illusion.
Langdon was already unbuckling his Mickey Mouse watch.
You know I don't have children, Robert, she laughed.
Keep your Mickey watch. I did this only to illustrate a point about impossibility. And the point is this. What I am about to tell you about human consciousness will seem impossible at first. As impossible as two synchronized goldfish. But if you permit yourself a change of perspective, everything will suddenly make sense, and those things you once found mysterious will appear as plain as day.
From that moment on, Faulkman found himself hanging on her every word. Lunch turned into a 3-hour mind-bending journey of discovery, including Catherine Coyley promising him that her book would outline a series of cutting-edge experiments that she had performed and whose results not only supported this new paradigm, but also suggested our current human experience was woefully limited compared to what it could actually be. By the end of lunch, Faulkman was uncertain if his spinning head was on account of Catherine Solomon's ideas or too much wine, but he knew one thing for certain. I am definitely publishing this book. He suspected this lunch might end up being the best publishing investment he'd ever made. Now, however, a year later, hogtied on the floor of a freezing gold van, he was having serious second thoughts about his decision. He hadn't yet read a word of the manuscript and knew nothing about her mysterious experiments, but still he felt perplexed that anyone would want to destroy it. For God's sake, it's a book about human consciousness.
Faulkman's kidnappers were sitting nearby, engrossed in their devices.
Hey, guys,
Faulkman ventured, teeth chattering. He wanted to keep them talking.
What's so special about this book? You know it's about science, right? There are no pictures.
No reply.
Look, I'm freezing. This is insane. If you can tell me why you're so interested in this manuscript, maybe I can...
We're not interested at all, Buzzcut said. Our employer is.
Darth Vader can read?
Buzzcut actually chuckled.
Yes, and he wants to speak to you.
We have a plane fueling. We'll be leaving shortly for Prague.
Faulkman felt his body tense.
Wait, no way in hell I'm going to Prague. I don't have my passport. I need to feed my cat.
I stole your passport from your apartment, Buzzcut said, and I shot your cat.
Faulkman was genuinely afraid now.
That's not funny. I don't even have a cat. Can we talk about this?
Sure thing. Buzzcut gave a cocky smile. Plenty of time to chat on the plane.